You're listening to WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro. Freedom of expression is essential to a free society, and that's what we've got here. We've got a free society right
what
here.
What she said.
At Claudio's Speakeasy and Radio Theater. And that was your host, Claudio, Renaissance man and bard of WCOM, who has opened the doors once again to invite you all in to find a seat and get comfortable in the place where you're always welcome.
And boy, are you in trouble. You know, that music that just went off really takes me back to when I lived in the West Indies. I did a radio show with King Obstinate, the Calypso King of the West Indies. Uh-huh. And he would start the show saying, "Ladies and gentlemen, you want to watch your business grow? Advertise on the King Obstinate Calypso show for the next 1 hour. The country's mine." And speaking of dictatorship, hooray for Tunisia.
Okay.
I told you we were in trouble. They kicked out a dictator.
Oh, right.
Gotta bless anybody who does that. Where were they when we had George Bush? See, here comes the trouble. Let me go ahead and acknowledge the Historic Carolina Theater, my underwriter, our sponsor here on the Speakeasy. They're just starting up their events, so just go to carolinatheater.org and see what's coming up. All sorts of goodies just begin to happen again. This is pretty much when the full season kicks in swing now, February and on into summer, and it pretty much runs dry during the summertime and then picks back up when the weather gets a chill, when people come back from the beach. But this is the season emerging once again, so please keep your eye on what's going on at the Historic Carolina Theater of Durham, sponsor of WCOM's Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater.
Ta-da!
Had to get that plug out. It was just in me, like, oh, now I can swallow.
Clear your throat. Mm-hmm.
And today in the studio, got an old buddy that you've heard several times, many times actually on the show, and that is the now author. Well, been an author before, but this is his most recent work, R.T. Crowley, otherwise known as Bob Crowley, and he's going to be here talking with us about his new book, The Wanderer of New Hope, a story about ghost stories, flickering yellow lights, and strange appearances of The Wanderer of New Hope, a new historical fiction novel by R.T. Crowley.
That's me.
That's you.
Yep.
And on top of that, we got a guy that doodles and scribbles and draws and illustrates. We've had him here before, Derek M. Eason. He's the illustrator for the book. And I myself, of course, had the privilege of writing the preface and the theme poem. So you've got the three musketeers about the new book going on in the studio today. Yep. It's actually one of the first times I can recall that I am part of a project of people that I'm interviewing.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. I'm very proud to have you there.
Thank you, thank you.
Wonderful job.
And we've got you coming, you're doing a book signing in Apex. Go ahead and give us a scoop.
Well, we got our book signing coming up this Saturday at All Booked Up, the bookstore in Apex, 104B North Salem Street in historic downtown Apex.
And that's 27502, in case you're doing that. What's that thing you do when you find directions?
Yeah, Google Maps or whatever.
Or GPS.
GPS, yeah, they'll do that.
GTO, get the tools out, yeah.
Yeah. You had one of those, huh? But we're going to do a book signing on Saturday.
That's from 7 to 9 p.m.
7 to 9 p.m. at the bookstore. We're going to have me and, Derek will be there. Claudia will be there.
I'll
and
be
Audrey,
there, yes.
I hope, will be there. And we're going to have some food and some wine and some readings and poetry readings and signings and an art auction and who knows what all else.
Depending on the wine, it may not be Bob doing the reading.
Yeah. We'll let Derek do the reading.
Yes, there we go. So, Derek, how did he get you into this, scribbling on pages and creating illustrations for this work? When we spoke about this early on, I had no idea he was even going to use illustrations. How did you get woven in?
Well,
I put him on the spot. He doesn't know what to think about this.
Well, the publisher brought you in, as I recall.
I remember having a meeting with you. Well, we did the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, Bob read the book to me, the stories, and I just saw images.
Oh, I see. So it was the cover you were brought in for, but then it opened up to them wanting more. Right. I got you.
Yeah,
we needed some inside illustrations, and Derek, as I said, did a wonderful job. One of the things you'll notice as you read the book and look at the illustrations of the wanderer or the characters, they're done pretty much freehand, shall we say. But when you look at buildings and scenes, these were actually drawn from photographs that were done
right
by the U.S. Farm Recovery Administration in 1938 and 1939 in the New Hope Valley. And by the way, any of you who don't realize what the New Hope Valley is. That's what we now call Jordan Lake.
I actually, in the 80s, lived in a house that was moved from what is now Jordan Lake. Right. So I have a personal connection, which is among the reasons I wrote the preface. Mm.
So we had a lot of fun writing it. Everybody always asks me one question. I'm going to get out of the way quick. Is how long does it take you to write a book? Well, how much pain do you want to endure?
I was going to get to that question last.
Oh, well, then I'll shut up.
No, no.
Just teasing. No.
The guest is always right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and I think if you put it all together, if I had actually sat down and worked 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, I'd say 4 to 5 months probably. But that was stretched out in little bits and pieces over about 4 years. So. Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty lengthy literary pregnancy, if you ask me.
Well, yeah.
Well, it's not too far beyond average. I mean, it takes a while to put a book together.
No, I know. Absolutely. Yeah. You tend to grow them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like the characters will tell you the story. And when I originally wrote the treatise for the book, it was entirely narrative. It had no dialogue whatsoever in it. It was just the legends. And then I showed it to the folks who published the book, and they started saying, you know, this would be really, really great if you turned some of this into dialogue.
You approached them more as a historian.
Yeah, and just to say, hey, you know, this is something that might work for you. And we just kind of said, yeah, let's try to do that. And I started writing in some dialogue. I wrote in a family, the Family Stone. That's actually a valley name. Mm-hmm. There were stones down there. A lot of rocks, too.
Still getting this rock music metaphor. Watch out.
The Stones are the second richest family in the valley, and they kind of ran things, as it were, except for old man Ellery Dibley. Dibley is an old curmudgeon of a miser, and he's the richest guy, and he, you know.
But it's all buried in the backyard.
You made up great characters. You really did make it. I mean, they're very engaging, and you follow them.
I'm not sure they were all made up, were they?
Well, most of them, the characters were. The names I picked from, actually, a Pittsburgh phone book.
wait a minute.
Well, not specifically to people, but what I do is just open the book and look for a last name that had many, many, many entries.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then I would grab the first name from someone else, like the Stones. Well,
okay.
I don't know that there is a Lysander Stone living at all in Pittsburgh, or if there ever was, but Lysander Stone is the patriarch of the family.
So we can refer to this as fictional facts and factual fictions.
Something like that. It's technically the term is historical fiction.
I see.
Right,
but it's woven around real history. There is a photograph of one real person in there, and that's Sheriff John Wesley Taylor, who was actually sheriff of Chatham County in the 1880s. He figures into the story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I did that. And there are a couple of real people that are mentioned. One that I'm rather fond of is a fellow by the name of J.C. Knowles. Now, if you live in Apex, you know J.C. Knowles. J.C. Knowles is the town ambassador. His job is to go out and bring tour groups in and get them to shop and do all sorts of stuff. Well, J.C.'s been around Apex forever, and he tells, with all apologies to him, some of the world's worst jokes.
And that is what I remember.
He tells them over and over. So I needed
He tells them well, but you're right.
Well, I needed a scene 40 years ago where one of the main characters was in Apex chatting with someone over lunch. So I said, well, why don't we do J.C.? And I have him telling the same bad joke he's still telling today.
And how did he feel about this inclusion?
He laughed his butt. He just laughed all over the place when I showed it to him. He thinks it's great. So we have him there in telling the joke over lunch to the main character at the time at Baucom's pharmacy at the lunch counter there. And if you ever want to go back to Apex and find that, just go to Anna's Pizza Restaurant. And that's now where Baucom's Pharmacy was. So if you ever want to go back to a real place and have some good pizza, there you go.
They still got a back room where they peddle pills?
Watch out.
Yes, look out. No, that doesn't happen there.
No, they don't.
No. You'll have to talk to the owner about that.
Yes. Well, you can tell him we thought of him.
I will. He may be listening for all I know.
Claudio, why'd you send all these strange people to me wanting to know about the back room?
They came here looking for pizza and a pill. Wait a minute.
Claudio knows more back rooms than anybody else.
Watch
in the
area. It. Don't go there. That's where I live.
Let's straighten up and fly right.
It's no fun.
So anyway, I think we started this talking about illustrations, and I
yes, we did.
I pulled these pictures and I showed them to Derek.
And everybody but the illustrator is speaking. I notice this.
And
any new comics on the horizon here? I'm going to bounce you into this one way or another.
Okay. Yeah, I'm still working on my comic, my independent graphic novel, set to release sometime this
year. Give us the name. Are you willing to do that yet?
Oh yeah, it's The Knuckleheads.
Oh, that's right. I remember that from the last show we talked.
The Knuckleheads, yeah.
Last time we had you on. So you just ended up reading the story and then were inspired to create more images.
Yeah, once I heard the story, I ran the idea by Bob about adding more images inside of the, you know.
How many have you got all together in the book?
Probably about 12 or 13.
At least.
Well, that's a good amount. Yeah. I know you did one for the poem.
Oh, yeah.
The theme poem.
Yeah.
And these are really very well done images. I mean,
yes,
you are a very talented artist.
Thank you.
I mean, sometimes when you like my coming from the older generation, you say,
if you insist, you know, nobody out there knew this,
right? Comic book, and I think of you know, like the comics in the Sunday comics or something like that. But what you've got is really art.
Thank you.
And people will appreciate that.
I would definitely say so.
It adds to the book.
My mother, she welcomes this style of artwork. Yes. She always says that I draw little monsters and stuff. So she's going to enjoy these illustrations.
In reference to your own comics? Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Well, exactly. I've seen the art that you do in the graphic comic when you were on last time and you brought copies of them. And
I have my own for a collector.
It's bright and exciting and colorful. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And
I wanted it to be a cartoon that you're basically reading. So. You
and that's good, too. It tells a good story along with it.
Well, one thing to remember is Derek is a fantastic artist on his own. We did a show at the Apex Arts Council not too long ago, and he entered one of his pieces in there. It was an absolutely glorious charcoal portrait of Miles Davis.
Wow.
It was really, really good.
How appropriate. So just charcoal, no colors.
Just charcoal.
Just the tone.
For that
charcoal
piece.
Yeah, beautiful, I'm sure. Yeah.
What kind of other instruments do you use? Do you do oils or watercolors, acrylics?
I don't use oils. I can, but I usually use pastels, acrylics if I'm painting, charcoal, pen and ink, pretty much anything. Sculpture, I've started sculpturing couple of years ago. Love it.
Yeah, I remember you telling me something about making these little figures that your son really enjoyed, or he broke one, or what was that story?
Remember that. Yeah.
I do remember that.
He broke the arm off. I don't know.
You can find that show on another podcast.
Yes.
He was two, so.
But he's so cute. I mean, you forgive him right away.
Yeah, I forgive him. That's what kids do, so I couldn't get mad at him.
It was my fault.
That's why God made them cute, so we can't stir up any emotion about it.
I have an ex-father-in-law used to tell everybody how babies and monkeys are cute.
Okay, were you going anywhere with this?
No, I just thought I'd throw that in.
Gotcha. Well, since you just threw that in, I'm going to throw a little bleep in about upcoming shows. We've got Peggy Taphorn coming here the first week in February. She runs the Temple Theater in Sanford. She's a real cutie. Going to catch us up with and you're welcome to be here for that show. Catch us up on all things Temple Theater in her own life. And also, next week, if I can help it, my best friend's going to do a call-in. He's a deep-sea captain. He's probably going to be doing a crossing from here from Fort Lauderdale through the Bermuda Triangle, and he may be calling us on satellite phone while he's going through the triangle, depending on how this
that
all plays out.
That would be very interesting.
So we're going to have a ship to shore with my best friend, the sea captain, who is like something that walked out of a great novel. He's truly a classic sea captain.
I hope the signal doesn't disappear suddenly or something.
We'll see. Last we heard of the captain, he was on the show. Yes.
Is it going to be a theme? We have the Wanderer this week and the Captain in the Triangle next week.
Isn't that interesting?
And the Triangle here. And
Well, I think God knows I'm given to the mystical, so maybe that's what's happening.
Well, somebody knows.
Look out.
Somebody knows. I'm not sure who.
I can see Audrey a little concerned about her association here.
I'm just contacting my ships that are circling the planet.
You know, I see, good.
Saying, just watch out for these people.
Mm-hmm. Beam me up, Scotty. No intelligent life,
Exactly right.
I'm about to go get my tinfoil hat.
Have you ever worn a tinfoil hat?
No.
No? Oh, I did.
Not yet.
You did? You did. Why doesn't that surprise anyone?
It's a long story.
Well, speaking of stories, go ahead and give us that one, and then I'm going to ask you to read your foreword.
No, I'm not, my whole foreword? No,
just take,
you don't want to read
the tinfoil off. Well, read what you'd like.
Well,
this will be The Wonder of New Hope by R.T. Crowley. Crowley himself reading. Whichever portion you'd like to.
Well, I have one section that I kind of do because people seem to like it. One thing about this is don't think of this as a gothic horror novel. It's got a few places where you might get a little scary or something like that. But I know the last time I read this particular piece, I made Audrey jump. So
it's more just bringing a legend to life and very matter-of-factly. Well, but it does have its moments.
It does.
Spooky. It's supposed to be.
And the spooky parts are the true parts.
Actually, a lot of people ask about that. I mean, where did you get the idea and so on? And actually, this started because I was looking for a local legend. I work with the New Hope Valley Railway as well. And I was
so you hadn't become one yet at the time?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I was in the process. I was, just growing from a rumor.
You're working on that. Okay, gotcha.
It's growing from a rumor to a legend.
Mm-hmm.
I decided we needed something of a legend, and I started looking around to see if there was anything. I found there were a number of local legends about various ghosty type things, mm-hmm. but all of them were disjointed. So that's where the novel or the idea of the story came in, was to pull them all together, kind of connect them, and then wrapped it around the historical parts, and then into when we started to do dialogue into the family and so on to build the story. And one of the pieces in here involves a character that I've named Miao Fushi. Fushi again is a normal valley name, and Miao I got from one of the early sheriffs of Chatham County, Miao Scurlock.
Interesting. All right.
So it's just putting those two names together, and Miao becomes a deputy sheriff, and one of the things he has to do is serve papers of eviction on occasion, and he is going out one night to do that. It's the last thing he's doing. It was just getting on to evening on a chilly December day when Deputy Miao Fushi rode down the trail leading to the Bright Farm to serve the final foreclosure and eviction papers. It was his last duty of the day, and he was already looking forward to getting home to his supper. Just before he turned the last bend in the trail before the house, he noticed what seemed to be the flicker of pale yellow light in the trees off to his left. The light appeared to float in the air about 4 feet off the ground and move through the woods beyond the edge of the road, matching the pace of the deputy's horse. He slowed, and the light slowed with him. He rode a bit faster, and the light accelerated remained at his side. He stopped for just a moment and the light ceased its movement, only to resume its parallel course when the deputy urged his horse onward again. The very hair on the back of Deputy Fushi's neck was rising as he rode faster toward what he perceived might be the relative safety of the shack around the bend. If nothing else, it would offer cover and concealment from the source of the light. He was a mere 5 yards from the turn when it all happened. But his story grows fantastic at the point of being incomprehensible as it continues. Assuming the story can be believed, Deputy Fushi said the light moved a few yards ahead, a little short of the turn, and floated out over the road directly in front of him, stopping to hover in midair, swaying a bit as if it was the light of a lantern held by an unseen hand. The deputy reined in his horse, but the normally docile old mare would not be still beneath him, and danced about as if desperate to flee as far from the light as possible. Then the spot of light began to grow. It did not brighten, but its power to illuminate a larger and larger area of the road increased. The spot of light itself did not increase in size, but soon developed a halo or corona as if a mist or fog had surrounded it. Barely a moment later, the mist began to coalesce into a vision of a human-like figure, its eyes in a deep, fixed stare directly into the eyes of the deputy. According to the description given later by Deputy Fushi, the figure appeared to be relatively short and generally human, but that's where any resemblance to any creature he'd ever seen before ended. The apparition was dressed in the tatters of clothing like he'd never seen. He described it as looking vaguely colonial, but from the description it was from the earliest phase of North American colonization. Laid over and among these bits of fabric were furs and hides from all manner of valley animals, some sewn in and others draped over. On its feet were what looked like moccasins, but with large silver buckles, also of the early colonial period, tied to the instep. A crude lantern, the source of the well-known pale yellow light, made of sticks and clay, hung from the specter's left wrist, while the right hand held a thin pole sharpened at one end, apparently for use as a spear as well as a walking stick. Above this ethereal bundle of odds and ends stood a head covered in white skin with sharp blue eyes seeming to all but glow with their own inner light, topped by an unkempt pile of auburn hair gleaming with fire-red highlights in the moonlight. The deep blue eyes continued to stare straight into the eyes of Deputy Fushi for long moments, transfixing him and riveting him to the spot as much as the skittish mare would allow. Then at length the spirit's right arm straightened toward the deputy, pointing the spear end of the walking stick directly at his face. No more than a yard lay between the point of the spear and the tip of the nose of the now terrified deputy. Suddenly the spear and arm lunged forward to the point stopping barely 6 inches from the horrified man's throat. The corona around the ghostly figure grew larger and brighter, and its eyes flashed with a devilish light. Somewhere deep within his brain, soundless to his ears, yet ringing like a screech of a banshee in his mind, the deputy felt more than heard the words, "Begone!"
And that's where I jumped.
Mm-hmm.
I was steeling myself against it this time.
Yes. Anyway.
Not a very friendly moment.
Nope.
That was a great read.
That was. And that was taken very much from as much fact as you could muster. I do recall that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And there were other legends. I've interviewed a lot of the old Valley people in trying to pull this all together, trying to find the story of the Valley. Being with the railroad, my initial idea had been to write the history of the railroad, but I found I could do that by just reprinting about 5 pages from annual reports and leaving it go. But that's when I found that there was more of a story. The New Hope Valley was quite a place. It's impounded under the waters of Jordan Lake now.
That's what it is now, exactly.
But
I do remember my own experience walking the tracks right off Goodwin Road, and I know that back in those years, as a matter of fact, I mentioned it in the preface. As a matter of fact, it might help the listenership to identify with the overall book if I read the preface. So
first,
if you folks will indulge me, I think this will give you the true flavor of the work.
Just before that.
Oh, okay.
Here's the preface.
Gotcha. I'm looking at the theme poem. I'll read you the preface, and I think this will really sort of lay out the book without the author's actual language. Preface is called Glimpsing the Wanderer of New Hope, written by yours truly. Perhaps the title of the book itself reveals the true spirit of our own inner enigmatic mystical wanderer. As many, whether by experience or belief, or due to grave personal misfortunes, found in him a new hope for justice. To find the power of language in conveying myth or legend effectively is the true mark of a storyteller. In R.T. Crowley's The Wanderer of New Hope, the wraith and specter comes as hauntingly to life as his yellow lantern easily prevails itself upon the mind's eye, whether actually seen or simply imagined. The landscape and historical perspectives, along with an imposing and equally fascinating cast of characters, are yielded masterfully by a true historian. This literary smorgasbord also goes a long way in revealing local regions, culture, and lore. The rustle of leaves during an absence of wind or animal is not unfamiliar to me during long walks from twilight into night along the railroad tracks near Goodwin Road in Apex. I lived and thrived there for 8 good years with my 4-legged hiking companions Buddy and Tasha during the 1980s. A pale yellow lantern in the distant wood also rings true to memory, however vaguely time dilutes it now. The stories I heard from farmers, neighbors, and landowners about drowning out the former valley that is now Lake Jordan, for I lived in a house moved from that flooded region, were all tales of government discontent. The mystical wanderer walking its shores was often conveyed as much in relief at the possibility of a judgment and retribution in their favor as it was related as something more foreboding and fearful. In either case, these stories mirror those of R.T. Crowley like a familiar caution round a dangerous bend. You will meet the ghost no less authentically upon these pages than you might in an actual encounter. Rest assured, if rest you may.
Very good.
So, and we've got you coming. You're doing a book signing in Apex. Go ahead and give us a scoop.
Well, we got our book signing coming up this Saturday at All Booked Up, the bookstore in Apex, 104B North Salem Street in historic downtown
and
Apex.
Thank you very much for joining us. A happy new year to all of you from all of us here at WCOM 103.5 FM. Cheers.